Welcome to Money Tips by Charles Kelly, author of Yes, Money Can Buy You Happiness. Charles spent over 25 years in financial services, working for banks, insurance companies, and as a qualified independent financial advisor running his practice, before setting up his speaking, consultancy, and property business. Money Tips will help you save, make, and accumulate more money, whether you are a business owner, entrepreneur, employee, or still searching for your vocation.
Hi, Sir Charles Kelly, Money Tips. I've got a very special guest today with me, whose name is Brian Harvey, who is a SaaS specialist. And I'll let Brian explain what a SaaS is, but a lot of you who are in property may be aware of the concept of a SaaS scheme, S-S-A-S. But I'm sure this will be of great interest to people who've got businesses, property, and are looking to save tax while also building for their retirement. So welcome, Brian.
Thank you. Hi, Charles.
Great to see you. Can you explain first of all what is a SaaS? I mean, I know what it is from my financial services day, but can you explain to me what is a SaaS and how it would benefit people?
Yes, of course. So it stands for Small Self-Administered Scheme, and it's actually the company pension scheme for your small company. It can have up to 11 directors who are members of the SaaS and trustees. But it has a lot of features that are not typically found in most types of pension. So the main thing is you can make tax efficient contributions, avoid corporation tax by putting money into the scheme. But then it's allowed to invest in property. It's allowed to lend up to 50% of the scheme back to your limited company. It's allowed to lend money to third parties to get a return on that. And it's allowed to do anything that other pension schemes could do as well, such as stocks and shares. And it can invest in the shares of small companies that aren't listed, for example. But most people use it for the property advantages and the tax efficiency. I'll give you an example of a project I did myself when I first got a SaaS. I bought two commercial units in a town centre in Lancashire.
They have to be commercial, do they? You can't buy residential, is that right?
You can't buy residential. Yeah, it can't hold an interest in residential property.
Okay. Right.
There are ways of doing, I'll come back to that later, because there are ways of doing things with residential. So these two units were quite large and the business rates were high, and therefore they'd been empty for some time. So it got them at quite a good price. It paid £130,000 for these two, probably about 6,000 square feet in total. Now, because the SaaS had bought them, the SaaS pays for everything because it owns them. So it also paid for a remodeling project to turn them into six smaller units that all came under the threshold for business rates, which meant they were much easier to rent out, and it put the value up. So there was then a combined rental income across the six units of £40,000 a year, which meant they got revalued at £400,000 when the SaaS had only spent £250,000. So it put the value of the SaaS up, and it put the £40,000 a year rental going into the SaaS. Now, that generates money for the SaaS, of course. But if I'd wanted to generate money for myself, there are other ways of doing that. So, for example, the SaaS could have lent me the money to buy the shops. It could have lent the money to my limited company. So if I'd needed access to that rental income myself, I could have owned them in the limited company using a loan from the SaaS, and the rental would have then gone into the limited company and I would have had access to it.
But going back to the SaaS in the first place, where did this initial £240,000 come from? Was it from your contributions, okay, or did you move it from another pension scheme?
Yeah, that's a good question. So when people set a SaaS up, they fund it in one of two ways, or actually either or both. So you can either put contributions in up to £60,000 per person per year, and you can backdate those. If you've not used up your contribution allowances for previous years, you can go back three previous years as well.
Okay.
Or you can transfer pensions in from other schemes that you've had. Obviously, that takes a little bit longer. You've got some rules to apply as to how you get those pensions in there. But yeah, in my case, I had sizable pensions to move in there.
Okay, so that provided you with the cash to buy the property. But I understand SaaS can also borrow money, but you had the cash in there and you got a really good deal then. So by revaluing, by getting higher rent, I guess that the 40,000 a year rent 10 times that is 400,000. Is that where the revaluation came from?
Yeah, so with commercial property like that, you don't tend to get a bricks and mortar valuation. It's the value is based on the rental income.
Okay,
So that
well,
valuation came in.
that's fantastic. So basically, you're moving money from over here, which may be in your company, or it may be in another pension scheme, but you're putting it into a SAS, which is its own entity, I guess. And then that within that SAS, you can do things to build up your future retirement fund by either buying commercial property, stocks and shares, or other authorized things, I suppose. And then you're building up a tax efficient scheme that
Yes.
can fund your retirement, but also save you tax now. And I think you said that the SAS can also lend the company back money. So you can you explain that? Because you're putting the money over here and you're getting tax relief on it, but and then they lend it back to you.
That's exactly the case, yes. So the colloquially they call it a loan back because you're basically putting money into the pension scheme from your company, maybe in, the form of these tax efficient contributions. And then you're immediately able to lend half of that money back to yourself, back to your limited company, I should say, not to yourself. You need good security for it. There needs to be an asset to secure it against. But you can borrow it for up to 5 years. And you can charge yourself as little as 1% above the base rate in interest.
What kind of asset do you have to secure it on? Is it a property
It
or
can be a first
debenture or
charge on a
something?
property, or it can be the share value in your company. So, for example, if it's a property company, it can be based on the equity across your property portfolio, or it can be on an. There's a number of different types of assets, but most of them are assets that most property investors, for example, wouldn't have things like plant and machinery and so on.
Okay, so in that case, the reduction in cash flow would be minimal because they're saving on corporation tax, and then they're getting half the money back. So it's a win-win situation all round, isn't it? It
Yes,
seems to
yeah.
me.
And this is why it's really not like any other type of pension scheme because it's not sat there waiting for you to retire. It's something you can access well before retirement age.
Okay. Well, that's great. I mean, I've been to seminars and I've seen a lot of people talking about this in property seminars. And they
Yes.
all seem to say, yeah, get your money out of your pension, put it into a SAS, then you can lend it out to people. And then you go on to WhatsApp groups and they say, well, I've got my SAS now. I'm lending out this money to you to buy this, that, or the other. But they're taking quite a big risk at the same time because maybe they've given up a final salary scheme over here to put it in a SAS and then they're lending it out. They think they're a bank now. So I think you need some caution with it, don't you? I mean,
Yes, absolutely. I don't encourage people to lend it to third parties. Sometimes people want to, and they might want to lend it to somebody they've just met on a 3-day property course.
exactly, yeah.
So we insist on people getting first charge security over a property if they're doing third party lending. And if they're only doing a small loan, perhaps they can become part of a syndicated loan that can have a shared first charge. But we do insist on that because it's people have worked for this money all their lives. They're transferring in from other pensions. We don't want people
Yeah.
who've just come straight off a property training course and want to do risky things with the money they've worked for all that time.
I agree. You've got to have some caution because I've seen situations where the type of loans being asked for are things like, well, I'm buying this property for 100,000. It needs 30 spent on it. Then we're going to split it into this and that. And yeah, we'll get back 200. But in the meantime, they want 130,000 on a first charge. So they want all the money. And the property is not even worth 130 at this time. It's worth 100. And people are lending it to them. It's like 110% loans again. It's like the Northern Rock, but it's their
Yeah.
money. And these are people that are not even experienced. It's their first project. It's crazy to me.
Absolutely. So this is an area where HMRC's rules don't really measure up as well as they should, but we insist on a further level of security on top of what HMRC ask for. They say it needs to be prudent, secure, and commercial. Now, of course, prudent means acting in the interests of the scheme. So you could argue that that in itself means there should be good security. But they don't really stipulate that. But we do. I work
When you say
for
we, are you scheme administrators?
we're a scheme administrator called Retirement Capital, and I'm a SAS consultant there.
So does that mean they effectively get permission from the scheme administrator. They can't just write out a check to anybody and send it off. They have to get permission from the scheme
Oh,
administrator.
yes, of course. People,
Approval.
The trustees of the trustee members of a scheme don't have access to the bank account on their own. It's a joint signatory. And our whole reason for being is to do their administration, their annual return, but also to make sure they don't break any of HMRC's rules and that they're careful and prudent with their money.
Right.
HMRC will apply tax charges if you, you know, if you were to break those rules. They will apply tax charges. I mentioned residential property earlier. And I said,
yes,
I come.
Yeah, I'm going to ask about that.
So there are ways. So if you have a commercial property in your SAS and you want to convert it to residential, there is a way of doing it. But what people do is they do the conversion. The SAS will pay for the conversion, just like it paid for my remodeling of my retail units. It will pay for the conversion, but you have to stop before it becomes habitable. And at that point, so most people don't put the bathrooms in, for example.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, at that point, it's not habitable, therefore, it's not mortgageable. But you sell it to your limited company, and there are specialist products available that will bridge that. There's products that have been designed just for this very purpose with the SAS. Now, the interesting thing there is that because it's not mortgageable, it doesn't command full market value either. So you need a project where the SAS will make a good return on its investment, but when it sells it to your limited company at the fair market value, given it's not mortgageable, it will be below its potential market value at that point. So your limited company is getting a good deal and the SAS is getting a good return. And then at that point, you refinance it, get off the bridging product. Obviously, you put the bathrooms in or whatever it is you haven't done. And then you'll be in a situation where the limited company owns the asset. The SAS has got its money back and made a profit. It's ready to go on something else. Now, the only thing with that, that's something to watch out for. A SAS isn't allowed to operate like a business. It's not allowed to trade.
Okay.
If you did that repeatedly, you could get accused of trading. So it's just something to look out for.
And is the SAS paying capital gains tax?
No. So the SAS is a tax-free wrapper from that perspective. So, for example, when it's receiving rent or it's making money on it, on anything really, that money's allowed to, you know, accumulate and compound without being taxed. So it has a, you know, very desirable effect. And the other thing to say about residential property is a SAS is allowed to own property that's used for a number of different circumstances of care. So care homes, homes for the elderly. There needs to be a provision of care as part of it. But in that is that's an exemption for residential.
And mixed use, like a shop with a living accommodation, how about that?
So if you're buying a shop with space above it that isn't residential, you can buy that in the SAS, and then you can do what I've just explained, so convert the upstairs to residential and sell it out of the SAS.
Okay.
You can obviously split the title and keep the commercial part in the SAS.
Right.
But if you're buying commercial with upstairs was already converted to residential, you couldn't buy that in the SAS without splitting the title.
Okay. And I've seen a lot of people use a SAS to put their own business premises within the SAS.
Yes.
And then they pay rent to their own scheme.
That's right. So there's a couple of interesting examples there. I've got a client who's an accountant who's, when she bought the accountancy practice, she didn't buy the property. She took an option on it. You understand what I mean by an option on a property?
Yep,
so
yep.
She had the right to buy that for a number of years, but it couldn't
not
be
the
sold
obligation
to anyone else.
Yeah.
She didn't have the obligation, but she had, you know, it couldn't be sold to anybody else. Time to exercise the option. She's now buying the property using her SAS fund. I've got another example, very, very similar to that, where the client can't afford to buy the property in the SAS in its entirety. So the SAS is buying 35% of the property and the limited company is buying the other 65%. But because the SAS is paying 35%, there's a lender who's happy to treat that like the deposit and will lend the other 65% to the limited company. So it's a shared ownership model, which is allowing the client to buy a property that the SAS couldn't afford on its own. Even if it borrowed money, she still couldn't afford it. You know, the SAS was to borrow money.
Yeah, because I understand the SAS can borrow, is it up to three times the amount in the SAS? So if you've got 100,000 and you wanted to buy Can you give me an example of how much
No,
they can?
no. So the SAS can only borrow 50% of its own net value.
50% of its own
So
value.
it can't become over-leveraged.
Okay.
But it in this case, even if she'd borrowed 50% in the SAS still couldn't afford the whole property. So she's doing it the mixed the shared ownership model instead.
Okay. Now, the SAS, does it only apply to businesses in within a limited company, corporation, a limited company?
Yes, is the sensible answer, to be honest. It's the occupational pension scheme for your company. There are other ways. There's you can have a SAS for partnership, but the actual partners can't benefit from it, so it becomes a bit, difficult to make it useful. So yeah, the answer is really is limited companies to
Okay.
make it work.
That's that I also hear about people saying, well, that's okay, you just set up a limited company and run a SAS through it. But you wouldn't be able to put much in a new limited company. There's got to be profits there, right? Or drawings or salaries or something. You can't just set up a
Yes.
shell company.
Yes, that's right. So some years ago, HMRC would allow you to set up a SAS for a fairly new company. Now it's got to have a trading element to it, so it's making, it can make contributions, and it needs to be reasonably well established. They like it if it's published accounts. That's great. Big tick in the box. Then they look for other indicators. Does it have payroll? Is it VAT registered? Anything that shows that it's a legitimate company. If it hasn't published accounts, then they'll ask to see 6 months of bank statements if
Okay.
it's not got to that stage yet.
So what you're saying here is that the HMRC have to approve these SASs because otherwise it could be seen as a tax dodge. So the HMRC have to look into the company to see if it qualifies to set up a SAS.
That's right, yeah.
They're approving them, right? There's got to be some approval there.
Yes, there's an approval process. They take about 3 months, HMRC, to approve the SAS.
Okay.
And they're looking at the company first and foremost, and they're also checking that you're a fit and proper person. There's not a lot involved in that. It's just basically you've not currently bankrupt and you haven't been struck off as a company director. So most people qualify.
Yeah, I remember years ago I had a business, a limited company. We owned our own property, and I think we were buying the property at the time. And HSB said, "Yeah, you can have the money." And it was like an office building, and I asked this financial advisor guy that I knew, and I said, "Do you think I should put it into a pension scheme?" He said, "To be honest, mate, I'd forget about it because it's so much hassle. It's just a lot of rigmarole, a lot of red tape. You just don't go down that road." And we didn't. And I kind of regretted that because I thought, well, we could have saved a lot of tax because we eventually sold the property for like three times what we paid for it. And we paid
Yes.
out, I can't remember how many hundreds of thousands in capital gains tax. We could have saved all that. But there you go. You live with experience. But a lot of
Yeah.
financial advisors don't understand it.
No, there are I think that's probably true, yes. And but there are great tax advantages to using a pension for property ownership. And there's also so many different models of the ways in which people use it. And not everybody's a property investor. Like I said, I was talking about an accountant earlier that just is, that's a fairly passive investment she's making. She's going to buy the property and put it into the SAS. And then over the next 10 years, of course, it'll get all its money back in the rental income that she pays into the SAS. So instead
Yeah.
of paying rent to her landlord, she's paying rent to her own pension scheme.
Yeah. It's a great
So that's a
idea.
nice, but she's not a property investor, so she's not going to use it to try and actively grow her business.
I understand, yeah.
I've got other clients who are a business that owns quite a bit of property in its limited company, and they're a very seasonal cash flow business, but they're profitable. So every year they make the maximum contributions into the SAS, and then the SAS will pretty much immediately buy one of their own properties from themselves, from their limited company, put it into the SAS. And then the money, of course, goes back into the company and helps them with their cash flow.
It's
And
amazing schemes. So where does it all end then? That example there, they keep putting more and more into the SAS. When they want to retire, they've got all this money in the SAS, so they've got £1 million in there. How do they access that money? And do they need to retire to access it? Do they have to wait till 65, or how does that work?
no, so at 55, or that age is going up to 57 in a couple of years' time, I think it's 2028, I think it goes up to 57. From that age onwards, you can take a 25% tax-free lump sum, and you can also start to draw from the scheme. Now, obviously, once you've had your tax-free lump sum, the rest of your drawings will be paid at your normal marginal tax rate.
Okay.
And there's also got advantages for inheritance planning. If you die, the money doesn't go into your estate for inheritance tax. It
You
bypasses.
nominate the beneficiaries, do you?
Yes, nominate beneficiaries. What some people do is once their children are over 18, they include them into their business and make them members of the scheme, and therefore they can just carry on using the scheme without the money ever having to come out of there.
Amazing. And when you say you're at retirement, you're taking 25% tax-free cash, if all the money is in a property or properties, would
Yeah.
you then have to liquidate properties to get the cash out?
You'd have to liquidate. So it's something when I first talk to a client about what they want to do with a SaaS, I'm looking at what their objectives are in terms of do they need to grow their business? Do they need to create cash flow for themselves? Are they just trying to grow the SaaS itself? And what age are they? Because that project I mentioned earlier that was generating £40,000 a year from the row of shops, if you're 55, you can draw that money out again as an income. But if you're only 45, you can't. So you'd have a different model if you're 45. There's a great model I've seen people using recently where they buy the property in the pension scheme in the SaaS, and then their own operating company pays rent. But the operating company then operates it as flexible office space, a part hotel, might have a gym in there, might have a canteen, rent out the parking spaces. So with maybe a £300,000 property, and it depends where you are in the country, of course, but I've seen some in Scotland, for example. £300,000 property, you might be getting £30,000 a year in rent from the operating company into the SaaS. So the SaaS is getting a good return. But then that company is then making a six-figure sum of profits from its activities in the building. You're not waiting to get to pension age to
Okay.
start to use that to create wealth for yourself.
So you could call that having your cake and eating it at the same
Kind of,
time.
yeah.
Because you're not, a lot of people think of a SaaS or a pension scheme, but something you could put away and forget about until you retire. But in that example, someone who's maybe in their 50s already or 55, 60 and think, well, it's too late to do a SaaS, maybe it's not. Maybe they can buy commercial property, save tax, and get some income now. It seems like you're the best of both worlds.
Absolutely, yes. And of course, when that company then makes money, if it's making, taxable profits, you can start to make contributions from it.
Yes,
But
okay.
if you're making more money than you need in your company, you can make further contributions.
Okay, I mean, there's, I remember years ago I worked in the West End, and a lot of the West End shops were owned by pension funds, the Coal Board Pension Fund. And
Yes.
so this has been going on for years, but with big companies, a lot of large PLCs will sell their office to the pension scheme. And so it's not some new whiz that some tax dodge. This is a legal process that's been used by millionaires and billionaires for a long, long time.
Absolutely. And SaaS schemes themselves have been around since the 70s.
Yeah.
They've just been quite a well-kept secret. There's only about 25,000 of them in the country.
Really?
And they've become more popular since some of the property training companies started telling people about them and they go on the courses. But there's a whole, the example with the farmers and the accountants, these people aren't property investors, but there's an element of property in their business. There's a whole raft of small to medium businesses in the country that could benefit from the tax advantages, etc., but don't know about it.
And legally avoid paying too much inheritance tax as well,
Yes.
and you've got the ability to, as you said, to pass it on to children and grandchildren, so you keep the wealth intact within the family, which I think what most people want. They don't want to build up a business and then have the tax man put out their hand and say, well, thanks very much, we're going to take half of it or whatever, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I have a colleague who is an expert in inheritance planning. And the people who use his services are avoiding creating problems for their children after they've gone, because that's what it can become. It can become a problem.
And I think I was trained on SaaSes in the 80s, and I think the schemes were more flexible than they are now. And again, people didn't quite understand it. I remember we went to see a guy, and he said, "You mean to say You could put the money in, save the tax, then I can borrow the money back. I said, yes. He said, no, get out of here. He almost chucked me out the office. And he was introduced by a friend of his, and like family kind of friend. And he was shouting at us. He thought we were some scammers or something, but they didn't get it. And they, of course, he never took one. But I think that they're a brilliant way of saving tax. Yeah. And, obviously you help people set them up, do you, and administer them. I presume you
Yes.
advise people on whether it's right or wrong for them, or will it work for them?
I don't like to use the word advice because I'm not an IFA,
Okay.
but we do make sure that people qualify, and we do make sure that people's plans for what they want to do with the SaaS are in line with their skills and experience. And we say no to more people than we say yes to.
Okay.
That's probably mostly though because people come to us too early when their company's not been running long enough, or they've heard about SaaS and they just want to find out more, and they're not ready for it. But it is, yeah, it's not right for everybody. And I'm always keen to make sure that people understand what they're doing. It's a bit of a shock to the system if you've got £500,000 in a pension scheme that someone's looked after for you all your life, and you suddenly find it under your own control, and you've got to make decisions about it. You've got a responsibility to the beneficiaries. You've got a responsibility to make sure you comply with HMRC rules. And you've also got a responsibility to deploy it, because sometimes people sit with the funds, not deployed, particularly people who want to do third-party lending. They'll do short-term third-party lending, and then there's gaps in their year where it's not deployed. So they think they're going to get a 10% return, but actually they only get a 10% return part of the year when it's deployed.
Well, there's gaps when they don't get paid back.
Well, that's, as
Yeah.
I said, we don't, I don't really encourage people to lend it to third parties at all.
Yeah.
But if they want to, we insist on good security.
Yeah. But as you said, you can lend it to your own, to yourself, to that, to party
Yeah.
to yourself, then to do deals. So you can fund your own property deals, which are under your control, if that's what you're looking to do.
Yes. And you can do that over and over again. A lot of people just, even though you can borrow it for up to 5 years, a lot of people just do it for 1 year and treat it like a bridging loan that's making money for your pension scheme, and you're getting it at a reasonable price.
Yeah.
So they take the loan, they do a project, they complete it, refinance it, and pay the loan back, and then do it again. So you can build wealth in your limited company using the loan back system as well.
Okay, so the bottom line then is that it's for a limited company. I think most businesses probably should be in a limited company. We'd have to get advice from your accountant, and it's got to be making profits, trading, and be a proper company that actually makes a profit, pays salaries and that sort of thing. And what kind of age group do you think most people come into when they're doing these 30s, 40s, 50s? Can they do it any age or?
Most of my clients are early 30s upwards.
Okay.
Now, of course, it's only the older ones that have got larger pension schemes to sort of transfer across.
Yeah.
But I also know plenty of people in their 30s who are making good company profits and are able to make the contributions. I've been talking to someone this morning who's disappointed she'd not heard about it earlier because she's just paying a corporation tax bill for last year.
Right.
And, that money could have gone into a pension scheme instead.
Yeah, so you either pay it to the tax man or you pay it to yourself, in other words. I think
Yeah.
that's good. And if you get a company, I mean, you might have a company where it's father and son, for instance. So one's in his 50s or 60s and one's in his 30s. So presumably you can still, both can benefit in some way from that, I guess.
Yes. So you can have up to 11 people in the scheme. If you have more than one person, obviously the money has to be allocated to them in the pension scheme. So, if I start the pension scheme with £200,000, and my son only puts £100,000 in, then it's one pot from an investment perspective. But when it increases in value, it's going to increase in value, in line with those proportions.
Right, okay.
Obviously, we're always going to consider the apportionment of it when it comes to allocating benefits.
Okay. And are they expensive to set up? I mean, I've heard various sort of fees of, well, you tell me, is it very expensive to set up?
So no, it's for a single person SaaS, it's £1,450 for us to set one up. And then it's also £1,450 per annum for the administration service. So you pay both of those in the first year, but you only pay the admin in the second year onwards.
Well, that's quite reasonable, I think, those sort of fees. Yeah. So is there anything else you want to add, Brian, on this that you think is relevant that maybe I haven't asked you on?
I'd just like to, invite people to get in touch, and there's no obligation at all. You speak to me as much as you like. It's a subject that I enjoy helping people with. Encourage people to get in touch. Are we going to give people my contact details?
Yeah, I can put those on the notes if you maybe drop me a line with it. What exactly where you want them. I've got your details, but I'll put them in the notes.
Right.
On this, so they'll have a number for you or whatever.
I do a free discovery call, which is usually 45 minutes long, and go through some of these details we've just talked about, perhaps in a bit more detail. As I say, there's no obligation. You can have as many calls as you like, really. I just like people to understand what they're doing and know what they're getting into.
Okay, right. Well, I think that's been eye-opening for me and I'm sure for other people to let them know what they can do. And I'm very surprised that there's only, 25,000 schemes in the country when you think there are, millions of businesses. I think more people should start doing this. And I think what we used to say is, even if you're not planning to do anything with it now, maybe set one up, put it on the shelf and then start working. It doesn't mean necessary that you've got millions to put in it immediately.
No, and we do actually have schemes for people who've got a smaller amount. We have a thing called a SaaS Lite, which is a lower setup and admin fee. But we also limit what you can do with it whilst it's almost like a SaaS saving scheme, if you like.
Okay.
Getting the job out of the way, you're making sure you can put your money in from this year's contribution allowance, etc., from this year's profits, and then you're building up over a few years. And then when you've got a sufficient amount in there, you just switch up our admin service to the full service and use the full power of it.
Okay. Just one final thing about property, commercial property itself. I mean, I look around the high streets, I see a lot of empty offices and shops and that sort of thing. And but that is not the only type of property, commercial property. There's warehouses, there's all sorts of things. There's care homes, as you said. Do you see the commercial property market in that respect has still been a good investment? I'm not asking you to advise me, but presumably if they don't work as a shop, you can always convert them and do other things with them.
I think there's all sorts of, planning and permitted development laws, of course. And there's plenty of expertise available on those things. I see people getting much better returns out of commercial property than I do out of residential. And there's, as you said, it's not just shops and offices. And if you look at that model I mentioned earlier, the flexible office space, when I said that the pension scheme's receiving rent, but then the company's also making use of flexible office space, apart hotels, et cetera. That model works sometimes in towns where there's plenty of empty offices, because particularly post-lockdown, post-COVID, people don't necessarily want to take out a seven-year lease for the whole company to work in a building all the time. So they'll say, well, I'd like three desks. Six of us are going to share it. We'll have six memberships and we want to be able to give 3 months notice.
Yeah.
Now, the people I've seen doing that have got 97% occupancy.
Really? Yeah.
And they might have an accountant in one room and then next room, they've got a chiropractor. It's not just office space. It's flexible space.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
That model's working really well.
Yeah, I've seen them in my local town. There's plenty of those still going right through lockdown up to now. I mean, they also do call centre answering services for them as well and that sort of thing. So I think they work very well. And you mentioned hotels. I mean, accommodation is booming, isn't it? Hotels and that sort of thing. So I think, as you say, it's a better return. It's certainly less hassle than residentials. You haven't got all of these Renters Reform Acts coming through and scaring off landlords. I think
That's true. Very much so. Having commercial tenants is very different to having residential tenants in terms of the responsibility of dealing with them, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, thanks very much, Brian. And I'll put your details up. So contact Brian Harvey if you've got any queries at all on SaaSes, you've got a limited company, you're looking to save tax, buy, whatever, just contact Brian and I'm sure he can help you.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks very much, Brian. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Money Tips. For more tips and information, visit moneytipsdaily.com. The information given in this podcast is for your entertainment and should not be construed as financial advice. As always, take independent financial advice before making any investment decisions.